Y'all ready for this? The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. We are injury attorneys in our day lives and right here in our radio lives. We're here for you to answer your questions, solve your problems on any legal subject. 303-713-8255. That's 713-8255. And in the mountains, you can call us at 970-457-1009. Welcome to all of our listeners. Welcome to our stations. Don't forget about our website, championsofthepeople.com. We have a lot of information there, and we always call it an information-loaded website. Well, it is. And our free books there, you can download our free books and ebook anytime. If you want a hard copy, you can call us right here at the studio, 303-713-8255. We'll send you a hard copy. You can call our law firm anytime and do that as well. We'll just send you a hard copy of the books. So, information loaded website. You know, we've been doing a series on our other injury shows on the ABCs of car accidents and injuries. Back to the basics, the ABCs. A lot of questions, a lot of issues. What do you do? What do you say? And how do you do it? You know, and always in the background, there's car insurance. Always in the background, there's insurance. We've even covered trials. We've answered questions about trials. What do you do? And how does insurance play out in trial? What is the role of insurance in trial? So you can call us anytime, 303-713-8255. Join us live now is Martin. Good morning, Martin.
Good morning, guys.
What's going on?
Hey, I have a question regarding conflict of interest and also how that relates to insurance companies. Say you're insured by City Farm, your own insurer, but yet you get an accident and the other party is insured by the same insurance company. Isn't there a conflict of interest that, on its face, that's right there?
Well,
really you're claiming against, even though the other party is insured by the same company. How do you guys handle that conflict?
It sure makes you wonder at times, doesn't it, Martin, when you think about that? Yeah, so you got an insurance company that is representing both is backing both the plaintiff and the defendant. Obviously, the insurance company for the plaintiff may have spent some money on its med pay, but they don't get that paid back. So that insurance company would say, look, if the plaintiff wins, we don't get a dime. The only thing they have is that they now are representing, or they're now the insurance company for the defendant, whom they're trying to pay as little money as possible to the injured party.
They don't want to spend the money.
They don't want to spend the money, and they don't care that you're one of their insureds. Basically, an insurance company doesn't care that the defendant's one of their insureds, except for now they're having to pay, because the at-fault party is their insured, and they're saying, now we have to pay on this premium, or, I'm sorry, on this accident. I've had plenty of defendants and people who've been hurt on both sides at times when they have the same exact insurance company. The injured party will look and say, I've been in the insurance. I've had their insurance for years. I've been with them for 20 years, 25 years, 30 years. You'd think they'd take care of me. And the answer is they're not going to take care of you.
The other thing is on Martin, when you got a, let's just call it ABC insurance company. You've got the, we call it in our lingo, a double ABC case, meaning ABC insurance companies on the liability side, meaning they cover the at fault driver. And they're also on the victim in injured victim side. They cover the injured victim and they're supposed to, create a wall in between those adjusters, and they're not supposed to share information. They're not supposed to talk about it, et cetera, et cetera. But
you know damn well they do.
Well, suspected it for a long time, but they profess to say that there's a wall. But the bottom line is you wonder because one side of the equation has your injured person's medical bills, et cetera, and the other side of the equation is fighting not to pay. To pay anything, and it is two different adjusters, but you have to question if there's a real wall. But they say there is. What's that?
It's the same employer for those guys.
Yeah, and where you get at it is this, Martin. Here's where it becomes its biggest deal. You've got the at fault party who gets hurt, and they've got, as Gary said, ABC Insurance Company, and they're the person who caused the accident is insured by ABC Insurance Company. And let's say that person only has, let's say, $100,000 of coverage. And the injuries are going to maybe exceed or will exceed $100,000. So the injured party is going to be going for their uninsured motorist carriage or their underinsured motorist coverage to get paid more money. Well, you can see the problem. Here's ABC Insurance Company representing the at-fault party saying, okay, we'll give you this money, but now you've got the injured party saying, I want the same insurance company to give me more money. And the insurance company knows that by fighting it at the very beginning, they're saving themselves some money on the back end. And they recognize that. And so they use that as a double whammy against the injured party.
So really, the injured party, who is the plaintiff in a legal action, is really at a disadvantage because now you've got two sets of adjusters working for the same company.
Right, and they're working over.
You know, anything that the insured, I mean, the injured party shares information with his insurance company, it's going to just, you know, go across the hall. The file folder is going to go across the hall to the other adjuster and say, here's what this guy's claiming. So really, that wall doesn't really exist, probably.
Well, you know, I don't know that for a fact that actually happens, but it's always a question in people's minds about.
Well, working with the same employer.
Yeah, working for the same company, et cetera.
The likelihood is very great, though.
Well,
even though you can't prove it, probably, and they're not going to admit it.
Well, plus the it's very simple that the at fault party's insurance company, ABC Insurance Company, knows the harder they fight it at the beginning, they're benefiting themselves all the way through. They're benefiting themselves on the UAM. They know if we can keep from having to pay our full amount at the base on the first case, we're going to be saving ourselves money in the future. And we know that, like you said, eventually we're going to be turning all this information over to the UAM carrier. Eventually we're going to be letting them know what's going on. What you find amazing is how a lot of times when you get to the UIM attorneys, they'll look and they'll say, well, we don't think the case is worth what our same insurance company paid on the first case. And now they make you go through an entire another case to prove that your insurance company was right the first time and they should be right now.
So you had to prove your liability case, and you had to prove your injury case to the liability side of the same company, ABC company. And if and when they pay, then you want to make a UIM claim, underinsured motorist claim, with your own insurance company, which is the same ABC company. And so you got to reprove and redo it all over again. And, you know, your question was there's a conflict of interest, but it sometimes is very, very difficult to get done.
Martin, I've got that that situation right now, and one where the underinsured motorist for ABC Insurance Company has their lawyer has said, well, our lawyers on the first case overpaid. And so we're not going to, we think you got overpaid on the first case. Well, it's just an excuse not to, you know.
Well, it becomes very convoluted very quickly.
Right.
From the get-go.
Right. And the adjusters start criticizing the other adjuster and the lawyers, and they keep saying, well, we overpaid, so we're not giving you any money now. We just over-assessed the value of the case the first time around. It's just another way for insurance companies to really make it clear that it doesn't matter how long you've been there insured, they don't care about you.
Thanks for the call, Martin.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Appreciate it. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. You can call us 303-713-8255. Don't forget about our injury show. It's going to air tomorrow morning on a variety of stations and in the mountains. Also, Saturday and Sunday mornings, we do that as an informational service. Those are injury shows. This show's about you. Robert will be right with you after we get back from the break, and we will be right back.
Today. I don't know what it is. Something's wrong with our eyes.
Good morning. Welcome back. Here we go. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. It's a law talk show. We talk law. We're glad to do it. 303-713-8255. Our law firm is Bell and Pollock. We are here to help you. Right now we're talking to Robert in Colorado Springs. Good morning, Robert. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How's it going?
Good. What can we do for you, sir?
Well, I have a problem with a satellite TV company.
Okay.
They put some equipment on an apartment building I own, and now that the service is they're not providing the service anymore, they refuse to take the equipment down. When the tenant asked permission if she could have satellite TV, she had the technician call me.
Right.
And I told the technician that it was okay to put his service in the building, but for that apartment only.
Right.
And I stressed that it was for just that one apartment because everybody else had cable TV.
Right.
However, when he put the when he installed the equipment, he put a big box underneath the eave that services all the apartments. And now that the service is canceled, they refuse to bring it down. And another thing is that when he put the satellite dish up on the top, up on the roof, it's weighted down with large cinder blocks. Now, they never told me or the tenant that it was up to me to bring that equipment down from the roof or up under the eaves. So I filed a complaint with the BBB, and they responded. They said, well, since I told them it was okay to put in service for that apartment, they're not going to do anything about it. And I said I didn't accept that their response. So the BBB came back and said, well, they consider the BBB now considers the issue is answered and they've washed their hands of it. My question is, what can I do now? Would I go to small claims court? Would I go to some government agency like the Secretary of State or something? I don't know where to go from here.
Okay. When they installed the equipment and got your permission, did they send you any paperwork or did they send you a contract or any kind of document at all?
Nothing.
Okay. Did they give you any notice that, hey, we're putting this on here and we're not going to be taking it down or whatever?
No, that's one of my issues, that they never told me it was up to me to remove it.
And did they, do you know if they gave the user any kind of equipment or any kind of contract or paperwork?
She says there was not any paperwork.
All right. And when, go ahead.
Another, if I could just interject something else.
Yeah.
I tried to take the equipment down, but it's attached to the building with tamper-proof screws. So I don't have any means of, I don't have the tools to take it down with you.
Okay. And, there are local, there are some, what they call satellite installers or people who can talk to you. Have you talked to them about what it would cost to remove any of this?
No.
Okay.
Well, here's my take on it, Robert. You got basically two choices, okay? But Brad was hit the nail right on the head because a lot of the answers or the ultimate answers derives from the paperwork, i.e. the lease or the contract somebody had, whether they gave you the paperwork or not. And maybe it exists, maybe it doesn't, but that's the first place people would look, lawyers would look. But aside from that paperwork, you got basically two choices. So let's just talk. And this applies to a lot of situations. What you really want is them to take it down and remove it. So
right.
you couldn't sue in small claims court for that because that's what lawyers call equitable relief, meaning an injunction. An injunction, and it sounds strange, why would I want an injunction? Because you want, injunctions are of two types. Number one, it's a negative injunction, or number two, it's a positive injunction. That's a bunch of legal mumble-jumble, but I'm going to get there. So a positive injunction by the judge says, okay, you're going to go do X, Y, Z. I'm going to order you to go take this down. That's a positive injunction. A negative injunction is you can't do X, Y, Z. You cannot do that. And many times it applies to like football coaches. They want to go to another team. And they say, I can't tell you to coach to go to this other team, but I can tell you you're not going to play. You're not going to coach for any other team. That's a negative injunction. So that's very hard to do. You'd have to do that in district court. Okay. Maybe the judge would do it. Maybe they wouldn't. Probably not, because it's a positive injunction. Next, Brad hit the nail on the head again. If you get an estimate of what it costs and or if you pay somebody to do it, then you've got a money damages case, not an injunction case. You're wanting money damages. You're not wanting them to be ordered to do something or ordered to not do something, a positive or negative injunction. You're wanting money damages. And then you could go to small claims court because you're wanting money damages. Am I making sense to you?
Yes. So I would have to hire somebody to take it down, and then I could sue them for damages.
Or get an estimate.
Well,
but they're not. Yeah, I think the best thing to do is hire somebody, pay the money, and sue them in small claims court.
You've talked to them, right? You've called them up and talked to them.
I tried to, but I got the runaround, and then I got terminal hold.
All right. Here's what I'd like to do, because this isn't an uncommon problem. I'll bet there's a lot of people out there who are facing the same situation, that they've canceled their satellite service and the satellite dish remains on the roof, because basically what they're saying is it's cheaper to throw away the equipment than to send somebody out there, get it, use it, reinstall it, transfer it, store
exactly.
It, and all the other stuff. So they just figure what they're in essence doing is they're leaving their trash out there and figuring they can get away with that. So what I want to do is I'd like to take your number and have us call you this week and get the information about the company and the phone numbers that you've called, so we can get somebody to call up and find out under what authority, what documents, if any, that they're claiming they can just trash it, they can just leave it and walk away from it. Because
not only that, but they make it so that the homeowner can't take it down.
Right, with the tamper-proof screws.
With the tamper-proof screws.
Right, so they're making it so it has to sit there and it's unsightly. It's something you don't want, and you shouldn't have to have it on your property. And I think, for anybody else that's listening out there, anybody else, please figure that out. When you're dealing with these satellite companies or people who are going to install equipment on your roof or on your property, you want to talk to them about, are you going to take it off when I'm done with the service, and get that commitment and get it in writing? Because here's a lesson right here that we can learn right now from Robert. But what I'd like to do is see if we can make some calls and find out what legal authority they're using. Because before I have you go out and spend money or commit to something, and I want to see if they have any paperwork, any things filed with the regulatory services or anything at all that allows them to pull this off.
The other thing I have to say to you, Robert, you got a really great question, legal question, is many times, that you got put on, hold forever, and nobody will talk to you. They may not talk to attorneys either, but when they start getting attorneys' letters, and it's specific, and it gives them a deadline, and that's the way I really like to approach things. So-and-so, Mr. Company, Miss XYZ Company, we represent Robert, and he's got this problem with the TV equipment and antenna, and it's got tamper-proof screws, etc. And so you're going to remove this. Now it's a lawyer letter. Now here come the lawyers. You're going to remove it, and if you don't remove it by a deadline, if you don't remove it by 10 days, 7 days, something like that, then we're going to take legal action against you. And they won't talk to you on the phone. They're going to get the letter. That doesn't guarantee it's going to work, but I know in this type of situation it has a propensity to work.
It sure has more impact than a civilian trying to get something done.
I think it will. So let us take your number and call you this week. Get the necessary information and start calling these companies and find out a little bit about under what authority they think they can just dump their trash on you, because that's what they've done. They've dumped their trash on you.
Yes. Okay.
And let's find out where they and what authority they have. If they have some authority, we'll flush it out. If they don't, then I think the next step is exactly what Gary was talking about, which I think was great advice. Is that then you pay for somebody to come out and get it off, and you sue them in small claims court, and let them get about 100 people saying, I'm suing you in small claims court for the money because you won't take down this stuff, and eventually they'll start listening and start realizing they got to pick up the trash they leave.
Well, for those of us who have been around this planet long enough, remember the exploding Pinto car cases in the old days, and it was finally discovered that the company said, or found out in the documents that they said, yeah, we got a problem with this car, but if we fix it, it's going to cost millions. If we don't fix it, we're going to get sued. Out of 100 people, we might get sued once or twice, and so we'll take that chance. And that's exactly, I think, the analogy that you've got going on here. We'll be glad to help you. Can you? We'll put you on hold. Can you give Kevin your information?
I sure can. Thanks for your help.
Thank you.
Okay, Robert, we appreciate it, and we appreciate all your calls. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, 303-713-8255. Okay, Larry, we're going to get to you. Barbara, we'll get to you. Paul, we'll get to you. We appreciate your calls. Bell and Pollock, championsofthepeople.com. It's an information-loaded website. How about that? We'll be right back. Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Our law firm is Bell and Pollock. We are injury attorneys in our day lives, our radio lives, right here for this show. We're here for you, 303-713-8255. And we also do injury shows, separate shows. They air on Sunday mornings in the Denver area and Saturday and Sundays in the mountains on various stations. You can listen to those, or you can listen to the podcasts on our website, championsofthepeople.com. Right now, we're joining us live is Eric from Caitlin's. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Good. What's cooking over there?
Well, we're on our last week of our breakfast and lunch specials. Now, that breakfast special is that French toast grilled cheese sandwich. We're taking French toast, we're grilling it to a golden brown, putting a fried egg on there, some cheddar cheese, some deli ham, serving that with a side of maple syrup. That's the breakfast special for the rest of the week. And our lunch special is a grilled croissant sandwich. It comes with cream cheese, your choice of turkey, ham, or roast beef, slurped up with fresh sliced tomatoes. Also comes with a dinner salad. That's our lunch special for the week. And don't forget, Mondays and Fridays, we're still doing it. On Monday and Friday from 11 to 2, it's only $7.99. It's an all-you-can-eat taco burrito buffet. It's all-you-can-eat. It actually includes a non-alcoholic beverage in the price. Cannot beat that. And the weekend, we're squeaking out. Looks like one more decent weather in the weekend. So we'll get the bottomless mimosas running for $10. We got the umbrellas out. We got the TVs on. Plenty of things to do. You can watch the games inside. You can sit outside and enjoy the weather, beautiful Colorado weather we're still having. Have a bottomless mimosa. Have a great time at Caitlin's.
Okay, so where are you located, Eric?
We're at 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, that's one block east of Colorado Boulevard, and that's in the Glendale Shopping Center.
All right. Thank you.
Sounds great, buddy. Thanks.
Appreciate it. The Caitlin's Restaurants, you'll love it every bite of the way. All right, Bell and Pollock Legal Show, 303-713-8255. We talk law on this show. Right now we're going to talk to Barbara from Boulder. Good morning, Barbara. What can we do for you?
I'm 79, and I recently had a very bad fall, and I did not report it to the police, and I'm wondering if I should. This is what happened. I was walking on a residential street with my friend, and I had an umbrella up. A bulldog, apparently terrified by my umbrella, came rushing at me in full attack mode. I lowered the umbrella, and so the dog did not bite me, but I fell straight backwards and hit my head very, very hard on an asphalt residential street. I landed with my head lower than my feet. I laid there for maybe 20 minutes or so.
20 minutes?
Could even get up.
Well, did anybody come to help you?
My friend was there, and the owner of the dog was there, and they said, "Do you want us to call an ambulance?" And I said, "Well, not now." So I finally was able to get up with their help, and the dog's owner took my friend and I home. I called my doctor, and she said, "Go to the ER, right away, and get a CAT scan," which I did.
Right.
Fortunately, there was no skull fracture, no concussion, no bleeding. But I didn't report, now that I'm thinking clearly, I'm beginning to think I didn't report this to the police. And since I'm on Medicare, I think Medicare will probably want to try to recover the cost of the CAT scan.
Okay, let's cover that. When did this happen? And Brad's going to get right on this. When did it happen?
September 30th, about 8:20 in the morning.
Okay, well, you still have time to help yourself and do things. And so we're going to kind of go through the legal analysis of your situation here. Is somebody liable, and if so, why? But first, before Brad does that, when you go to get through the ER, and your doctor obviously did the right thing, and you say, even though the CT scan is negative, meaning it doesn't show anything, even though the CT scan is, quote, normal, end quote, even though the CT scan is unremarkable in doctor talk, medical talk, does not mean you don't have symptoms and concussion symptoms. But Brad, from a strictly liability standpoint, how do we analyze this situation?
Well, Barbara, let me ask you, the dog, was the owner out walking the dog, or was this Were you walking along the sidewalk where the dog lives, where the property of the owner? Or...
We were walking in the street. It's a very quiet residential area. And a man had come out from where he lives, I assume, with the dog to put things in his trash.
Okay.
And the dog came over and was very friendly with my walking partner, and then out of the corner of his eye, it must have seen me in the umbrella and thought I was a monster that he had to destroy.
But wait a minute, the dog was not on a leash, correct?
No,
right.
No, the dog was not on a leash.
Just running free.
So you know, and we don't know if this is the first time the dog's done this or not. But
we don't.
But, you know, and that's why you do want to get a record made of it, because, you know, that's always important to know if you have a dog that's got a propensity to do this, if it's the first time. But the owner has responsibility to maintain control over his dog. And in this situation, he had the dog out without a leash, and the dog, in essence, attacked you and has caused injury to you. So that, yes, the owner should be paying for the expenses that you incurred with regard to your medical expenses and any other damages that you've experienced. He's responsible for his dog. And I think it does need to be reported. I think there needs to be something put on record that this dog has had this first action of attacking a person.
Absolutely. You know, and I'm gonna analogize this to a defective product. We said years ago we had shows on defective products. Let's say you have a defective toaster, it catches on fire, burns your house down, or it doesn't have to burn the house down, but it catches on fire and does damage. If you don't report it, the companies always say, well, you know, we didn't know that, nobody told us. So that's number one. Brad is exactly right. You need to make this a report to the police. If they don't want to take the report, you write a letter and make your own report, period, paragraph. We're done with that. Now, is the owner responsible and liable for this attack? Let's drill down legally on this. The good lawyers would first go check the ordinances. Where do you live?
At Boulder.
Okay. A good attorney would check the ordinances about dogs, free-running dogs, because a lot of the insurance companies say, well, the owner didn't know this dog was dangerous. They didn't know. Well, what does the ordinance say? But that's not the end of the inquiry, Brad. You can go past the ordinance as to common law negligence, but that's where you start with regard to the ordinances and statutes.
Right. And the bottom line is that, you know, the dog left his property and injured somebody. And the owner's got to be responsible. See, and we want to be careful about where we draw the lines. You got lines about where the person it could lose the dog, or where the dog could be taken from and destroyed, versus where you just have responsibility for what your dog does. And you have to pay, or you have your homeowner's insurance has to pay for what your dog does. And in a situation where the dog is off the leash or is not being properly controlled, and I think Gary's right as far as going and looking at the ordinances, most ordinances are going to have somewhere in there, you've got to have control over your dog. If you don't have to have them on a leash, you have to have them control over them, and you have to be able to make sure they don't hurt other people. This dog did this. And it wasn't an accident. The dog didn't, you know, went after you. And so I don't see much doubt that the owner's responsible for the medical bills you incur and for the expenses you have.
Right. And, you know, the other thing, let's just talk strict law, Barbara. And you got a great call. We appreciate that. Let's just talk strict law. So in law talk, lawyers would be thinking and saying, well, is this a strict liability situation, which I'll explain here in a minute, or is this a negligence situation? So strict liability means when the act occurs, when it happens, you don't have to prove or show anything else, just that it happened and there's liability. Negligence concept means you have to have the act, the dog attacked you, and you have to have prove the owner did something wrong, knew or should have known about this dog and is liable. So that's a bunch of legal mumble jumble. Here's what I mean to tell you, Barbara. You probably have a claim. You probably need some initial legal help and some advice, especially if you hit your head that hard, especially if you're down 20 minutes and you've got medical bills, etc. And so we'll be glad to give you a call during this week to see if we can help you and guide you through what you need to do next and how to approach this. Would that be okay?
Yes.
Okay, we'll be glad. I'm sorry you had to live through this. I'm sorry you fell down. My goodness.
Well, I feel fortunate that I and you know, seem to be doing okay. But since I'm on Medicare, you know, normally if I had just fallen in and there was no dog involved, Medicare would just pay the cost of the CAT scan, which so far has been the only cost. But I'm wondering, I'm thinking that Medicare looks at that, they're going to want to, you know, be interested in the owner.
Well, okay, Medicare is like, it's sort of like health insurance. So they have the right to, for subrogation, another fancy legal word, that means...
I know they do.
Yeah, if you get paid for your injuries or medical bills, then Medicare says they have the right to be paid back, okay? Mm-hmm. But there's many ways to approach that situation. That's the general rule. So you have to take that into consideration, but if you have good attorneys, it is taken into consideration and solved. Medicare would not have or would not go take a direct action against the homeowner themselves. They'd have to rely on you to do that and then rely on you to pay them back.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So, all right, I'm going to put you on hold, Barbara, and we're going to take your information, and we'll be glad to help you. Would that be okay for you?
Yes. Thank you.
All right. We thank you for all the calls. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. We have offices in Greenwood Village, Denver, Steamboat Springs. We do injury cases all over the state of Colorado. But for this show, we're right here every Saturday morning for you. And don't forget about the Consumer Real Estate Show coming up after ours. Barry and Larry, they're very experienced real estate professionals, believe me, so you can give them a call for any real estate question. Bell and Pollock, we'll see you on the other end. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. Our law firm is Bell and Pollock. Offices in Denver, Greenwood Village, Steamboat Springs. We do cases all over the state. Right now, we're going to talk to Larry from Georgia. Good morning, Larry. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Gary and Brad, thanks for taking my call. In fact, I was in your beautiful city, Denver, a few weeks ago on vacation.
Oh.
And beautiful city. Great, fantastic art museum. Guys, I'm calling because while on vacation, I was in Wyoming. I booked a horseback riding trip there, and using a major credit card. When I booked the horseback riding trip, I was told by the girl who did it that I would only be charged when I actually took the trip. So on the following day, the day of the horseback riding, I had to cancel it because of scheduling.
Right.
And I was told at that time that I'd be charged no matter what because they have a cancellation policy, etc., which I was never informed about when I booked the trip.
Okay, did you sign any paperwork?
Signed nothing at all. Right. I've called the company over the weeks, right? And at this point, the company is adamant about sticking with the charge. And also, I guess at this point, I've also called my credit card Visa to contest the charge. So, but at this point, I think it's a matter of he said, she said. My question first is, at this point, who has burden of proof about the cancellation policy? One, two. Can you give me any advice as to how I should deal with a credit card company? And three, if I post a complaint on the web, any advice as to what I should say or should not say?
All right. First of all, I'm surprised your credit card company hasn't told them they're you did contest it. Is that still pending? They haven't decided what they're going to do.
That's correct.
Okay. I'm surprised. I'll be surprised if they don't come out in your favor. Usually on something like this, they'll put enough pressure on the vendor to tell them to cancel the charge. Okay. Second of all, you said you made a call up there and you asked them this information and they told you that, if you canceled, they wouldn't charge you, right?
No, incorrect. No, when I first booked the horseback riding, I gave it my credit card. And I was told at that time that I would not be charged until I took the trip. Well, the following day on the trip, right, I had to cancel the scheduling situations. And at that point, I was told they had a cancellation charge, whatever, and I would not be refunded my charge. I'd be charged.
Where did you book the trip? Did you weren't there face to face with them? You called them, or how did you book it?
I called them. I called them.
Okay. And so, you know, it sounds to me like this is probably a common practice. And I think, what's, you know, the question is, can you prove that they told you this? Because obviously they're charging you for something they told you they wouldn't charge you for, and that they lied to you. That's, in essence, what they did. They lied to you to get that done. So you're going to want to be able to prove that this is what they say and this is what they do. I would probably, if I were you, get somebody else to make a call to them also and go through the same thing you did and record them and show that they make those statements that they say, look, if you don't take the trip, you won't be charged until you actually come take the trip or until you actually come use our facility. And all you got to do is get that one time, and I think you're going to be able to have a stronger case about not having to pay.
Well, I agree, but and so you said this was in Wyoming, so I'm not exactly sure in my own mind about the recording, one party recording in Wyoming. You can do it in Colorado.
Yeah.
But so, man, that's a really great idea. At least have another person call and get the information. But, I mean, you really boil down to you've done the right things. You notify your credit card company. You protested. But your dealings with this company now should be in writing. No more phone calls. Nothing. Zero. It's all in writing, emails or letters or whatever that you said I wasn't going to be charged. You charged my card anyway. I hereby request and demand that you reinstate it and credit my card. Now, those are the first few steps, and then maybe have somebody else call and see if they get the same pitch or same story, because they shouldn't be able to get away with this. And since you didn't sign any paperwork, there's nothing there to worry about. So it is a he said, she said. But persistence in this case is important. I don't think I'd ever advise anybody to file a lawsuit over this, but you can certainly make demand. You can make legal demand, and you might even be able to make one through an attorney.
Well, and I think that in most cases, if you haven't signed any paperwork, it's hard for them to say they can charge you a cancellation fee because there's no paperwork. So I'd be really surprised if your credit card company doesn't rule in your favor.
Guys, two fast questions. So if I hear you, the burden of proof, I didn't sign anything at all. So if I hear you, the burden of proof is on them if I'm correct. And then two, if I post a complaint about my experience on the web, I don't want to libel myself. Can you give me any guidelines as to what I should say and should not say about this complaint?
Yeah, I can give you a couple of guidelines. I mean, whatever you post, make sure it's true. It's accurate. Don't exaggerate. Don't go overboard. Just make it true. Probably less is more, and you can do that. Okay. Most companies don't do anything about it, et cetera, but make sure it's true.
And in a quick search here, I've got federal law permits recording of a phone call with the consent of at least one party, which means you're okay. And in another quick search, it shows that Wyoming is a state that also allows consent to that you only need single party consent to tape a call. So you could do what I suggested. And the only reason you would do that is to have proof that this is what they do. They tell you, oh, no, don't worry. Just give us your credit card. We're not going to charge you until you come use our facility. And then when you say, okay, I'm not going to do it, they say now there is a cancellation fee. I think in a situation like this, if you've told your credit card company this is the representation they made and they shouldn't be charging it, like I said, I've had credit card companies pull this stuff going, well, we're going to rule on the side of the vendor even when they – I have no reason to do it, but I agree with Gary's assessment. Also, if you're going to put something on it, just make sure it's completely truthful what you're putting on the web.
All right. One other point. So in Colorado, there's some statutes with regard to recording in divorce cases, and divorce cases can be a little bit different. And so you wouldn't want to, if you're in a divorce situation, say, I want to go record my spouse, even though Brad said that about the federal law, et cetera, because now then you have the federal law, you have the state law. So in normal situations, other than a divorce, it's a one-party rule, basically, general rule. There's some exceptions. But that's what I think you need to do. You make demand on them, and I don't think they have the right to do what they did. And it's a matter of contract law, Larry, meaning you entered into a contract to do a horse ride. They entered into contract to charge your credit card and provide you the horse ride. It didn't happen. The consideration failed. Then the default position is, well, is there anything in writing, part of the contract, that says they can do this? There's no writing. So, therefore, that's how Brad and I get to the analysis to the end result of they can't do this.
Yeah.
Super advice, guys. Super advice. Thank you so much.
If you have any troubles, give us a call later on. Let us know what happened.
Thanks for the call. Thanks.
Take care.
We appreciate all your calls. This is a Law Talk show. We're going to talk a lot with Paul from Greeley. Good morning, Paul. How are you?
Oh, pretty good.
What can we do for you?
Make this real quick. I have two questions. I've heard you guys talking in the past about when you go to emergency room, they'll have you sign some kind of paperwork that says that they won't take the payment, the reduced payment of Medicare. I can't remember what the heck you guys.
Okay, that's a great question. So let's refresh everybody's memory. So you go to the emergency room. You have health insurance or Medicare. Okay, let's just call it health insurance, ABC Health Insurance Company or Medicare. You give them your card, and then what happens is they say, "Well, we don't need your card. Go talk to this representative over at this desk." And the representative is representing a company called Avectus, A-V-E-C-T-U-S, Avectus. And they say, well, you don't need to use your card. We'll help you with this. What they're really saying to you is you're not going to get a discounted rate. You're going to pay full retail value, and we're going to help the hospital enforce their lien. Now, that's the short of it. We're up against the wall on time. I'll be glad to call you off the air, but what a great question.
Okay, yeah, because I have another issue, too, that... I was on my motorcycle.
Well, Paul, we're up against the wall in time. Let me put you on hold. Have Kevin get your information, and we'll call you.
We'll call you.
All right.
Thanks. Sorry about that.
Thank you very much.
We waited all that time, and we didn't get to him.
Yeah, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Karen, we didn't get to you. We're sorry about that. You can go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. It's an information-loaded website. Information is empowering. That's why we do it. That's why we're your champions of the people. The way the moonlight shined upon her head, and we were trying different things.